David Dusek, senior writer, Golf Week. There is nobody I'd rather talk to about Wyndham Clark winning his second US Open because you understand this from every angle. First of all, how bad was the heckling?
The heckling from what people could see on network TV on NBC was going to be pretty bad. And the fact that if you took a look on social media during the final round, Maggie, there were police escorting people off of the grounds at Shinnecock Hills for yelling things during, his backswing, for, wishing bad, like stuff that at golf events you don't see. And when that kind of happens, it really takes away from the event. Golf is just different. And this is something that general sport fans sometimes have a problem with, is that you're certainly encouraged to cheer and be boisterous and support your players and your favorite people and such. But it's not like going to Madison Square Garden and rooting for the Knicks. It's not like taking in a Giants game. It's certainly not like, a lot of different sports that we see week in and week out on TV. And it got pretty bad. It was not as bad as the European team faced at Bethpage during the Ryder Cup. But as this event is going on, it became such a thing that they had to acknowledge it during broadcast. And I'm sorry, no matter like what way you may feel about Wyndham Clark being a good guy, a bad guy, or whatever, it's not a great look for the Long Island and New York golf fan community to have within 12 months like these two different incidences. And it really, in some ways, it takes away from an amazing accomplishment that Wyndham Clark, having won now two US Opens, winning at LACC a couple of years ago, now winning at this one, really, really hard golf course. And yet people want to talk about, understandably, the fans and what they were putting Clark through as he was trying to win.
So, this is, I think, what casual golf fans really need answered. We understand that Wyndham Clark destroyed a locker at Oakmont out of frustration, and that obviously is a terrible look. He's apologized for it, though, many times. I think he threw a driver at the PGA. So he's had some public outbursts. But, David, we have forgiven athletes for so much worse than this, and he has apologized. So, I think what the casual fan wants to know is, it feels like we're missing something. The level of hate doesn't seem to match the behavior, while petulant, doesn't seem to match the type of vitriol that he got yesterday.
Yeah, it's almost like the apologies that he has made. And I had a chance, Maggie, last year at Oakmont, the incident sort of came out on social media on I believe it was on Saturday. He came up to my home game the following week. This week we're at the Travelers Championship just outside of Hartford. And I asked him at the press conference, I was the one person, I'm like, these things have come out. What do you want to say? Do you want to make a comment? Here's your opportunity. And he came out and he gave pretty much the politically correct, what you would expect someone to say, answer. And that was fine. And I talked with him afterwards, and he felt really bad about the whole thing. He's like, I'm in a no-win situation with this. I really sincerely regret what I did. It was wrong, and I own that. And he said that. But it's almost as if like him saying it wasn't enough for people. They wanted more blood out of this. They wanted to see and feel more what they felt was sincere remorse and just something. He paid for the lockers. They all that stuff. He's made charitable contributions to different causes on behalf of that. He's made amends with the USGA. He's been working really hard with a sports psychologist who I know was on broadcast, and they were talking about the different things that he's trying to work through. He's in a much better place. And the thing is he's a really good guy. I've spoken with him on numerous occasions. Big into fly fishing, big into sports, total jock. Loves his Oregon Ducks. There's a lot to like about Wyndham Clark, but I don't think that a lot of sport fans and a lot of golf fans who maybe don't know all this stuff, they haven't felt enough blood out of him. They haven't really seen him be humbled after that outburst and what they've seen to get past that. And I don't know if it's necessarily his job to please all those folks. Like, the number one person, like, he's got to please himself and his family and like his inner circle, because the guy's amazing at golf. But I think that's really where a lot of this comes from, is that he hasn't made at least those feelings come across to enough people. And because of that, you get what we got on Sunday.
It's fascinating because I think that fans now are savvy in some ways where they're just like dying for authenticity. This is why Full Swing, I think, became such a big hit, right? This is also, I think, what led to Scottie Scheffler kind of, not just the arrest that happened that kind of put him in this weird story that we called you that morning. You were on with us, I think, at 6:30 in the morning on the radio show talking about that day. But there was like, everyone, when Scottie Scheffler made that big speech about, I'm more than a golfer, golf is just what I do, there was like an authenticity there. And I think that really changed how people view him. if Wyndham Clark doesn't have that authenticity, I'm not saying he deserves to get heckled at all, right. but I can understand why fans are saying this is just PR. He's not really sorry.
Because a lot of these things, Maggie, we hear have a certain sameness to them. They have sort of the way that the messages are delivered, whether it's sincere or not sincere. A lot of times, professional athletes have worked their whole lives to throw a ball, to hit a hockey shot, to knock down a three-pointer. Like, that's what they do. Getting in front of microphones, having cameras, in basically everybody's pocket and videotaping everything when they're on a golf course, at an NBA game, wherever. They've not trained themselves, in most cases, to be so media savvy, to present their words and their feelings and their emotions in a way that comes across as being sincere. They're not actors. They're athletes. But we hold them, in many cases, to a standard because some athletes are wonderful communicators. You know, whether you agree with them or not, LeBron James is a tremendously good communicator. Michael Jordan has been a tremendously good... In the world of golf, Tiger Woods, as up and down and crazy as his career was a wonderful communicator of oftentimes nothing. But he would give you something. Here and there, you would get different things. I don't know if Clark has that innate charisma and that ability to communicate at this point what he's sort of feeling. Clearly, he's been ineffective so far. Whether his team now is like, hey, we want to keep you playing really good golf. We want to keep you winning championships and being a contender in majors and doing everything you're doing here. The added skill now that you need to have is to be able to talk in front of a camera or a microphone and come off better, whatever that's going to mean. There are certain players also who just, for example, Patrick Reed became a heel several years ago, but he won. And when the heel is on your team, you'll love it. I'm an LSU, my son's, I don't know if you can see that. Our house loves Lane Kiffin, but there's no bigger heel in sports. But when he's your guy, you love him. I don't know that that's where Wyndham Clark goes with his career, but there's always been a place in sport for the person that has undeniably high levels of talent, can get it done enough where you begrudgingly have to respect and concede that, like, I don't love the guy, but damn, he's really good. Or she's such a good basketball player. Like, I don't want to root for him, but hat tip, like, you're really good.
Yeah, I think that the athlete, though, has to be okay wearing, like, the black hat, if you will. Mm-hmm. Like, they have to be comfortable with it. LeBron never wanted to wear the black hat. He wanted to be, like, the big brother of everyone in the league, obviously, because he was starting an agency, I think, was maybe the cynical read. But he says it doesn't suit him. I wonder for Wyndham Clark if it actually suits him to continue to kind of be the heel, because obviously he is so undeniably good. Okay, this one's a little out there, but just bear with me. Shinnecock Hills has been, it's so historic there. Obviously, what an amazing venue. Crowds were a little, Wyndham Clark said the crowd was a little flat, a little small. Now, I've seen some reads on that saying this was intentional, that they were trying to go back to maybe make this like a more of a throwback of what golf should really be like. And then I'm thinking like that, this is a sport about the bottom line. Like, that makes absolutely no sense whatsoever. If you put together the flat and sparse crowds, the heckling crowds, which I don't think Rory appreciated for the second time, he was also heckled at the Ryder Cup, like, really badly.
Yep.
Is there a possibility that maybe they go away from Shinnecock Hills? Is it possible there's a rethinking of, hey, should we have one of our biggest tournaments here?
Well, the USGA, the U.S. Golf Association, is the organization that runs the U.S. Open. They also run the U.S. Women's Open, and they've got about a dozen other major championships, U.S. Amateur, et cetera. And they have what's referred to as a rota. So they have a rotating group of courses that they're going to go to. We were at Oakmont last year, Shinnecock. Next year, we're going to be at Pebble Beach. These are, even for moderate sport fans, like, they've heard of Pebble Beach. They've heard now of Shinnecock and Winged Foot and these different places. And Shinnecock Hills is now hosted up, I'm going to get this wrong, I think this was number 5, it might have been 6, in terms of U.S. Opens. The trouble with Shinnecock Hills, there's two challenges. Number one, they botched up the course setup the last 2 times going. And so it's a really hard golf course, like, on any random day. The course setup and the course, for negative reasons, became part of the story. They had to be really conservative with the way that they set it, because when it's super duper windy, you can't have the greens running so fast as the balls run flying. It's not fair. That was part of the story, which is makes it challenging for them to set up that golf course to be there. The other part, logistically, Maggie, you and I have been New Yorkers for a long, long time. Getting out to Southampton on a good day is terrible, right? Any New Yorkers who've ever ridden the Hampton Jitney because you knew somebody who had a summer share back in the day, or trying to drive on, the Sunrise Highway on 27 in the morning, early in the week, to get from Mid Island to the golf course was 2 or 2.5 hours. They really encourage people to take public transportation. There's a train that was going from New York right out there, but it's still a 2-hour ride. So on a Saturday afternoon in the summer, for people who are not sticking around the Hamptons, for the weekend, if you've got a bus back to New York, you got a long way to go. So you're taking a look, and the train schedule is what the train schedule is. And if the leaders are on 13 or 14 because they want to have this thing in perfect sync for prime time on television East Coast, so we want to finish Saturday and Sunday at around 7 or 7:30, maybe 6:30. People got to get out. They want to be home back in New York before like midnight on Saturday night. So things just don't line up logistically as well with Shinnecock because of where it is and what it involves than it would when a train when the tournament, for example, is in Mamaroneck, New York. It's just easier to get more people to and from the bigger hubs of the area. When the tournament goes, for example, to Torrey Pines in San Diego, it's just much easier to get around there or LA. The Hamptons is beautiful. It looks sensational on TV. It's everything that NBC wants. But logistically, going out there is a real hoof and a real challenge. And that's part of the problem.
So part of what I'm doing with this new podcast is I'm taking from a popular segment that Perloff and I had on our radio show and doing a stock up and stock down. So I think the stock down, if we're just kind of looking at golf and not to do it in reverse order and be negative, but I mean, I think you have to say obviously LIV in every possible capacity, right? The LIV Golf Tour, it's on its last gasp. The Saudis have pulled out. We're not even sure how many tournaments they're going to have. You had Jon Rahm and Bryson DeChambeau is like their two of their biggest,
Scott.
stars missed the cut. Dustin Johnson barely made the cut. I would say just globally stock down on LIV. But David, did they actually accomplish what Phil Mickelson clumsily said to our pal Alan Shipnuck, which was reshape how golf is in this country? And I'm not trying to give LIV credit. I thought how they did that
Oh, I get
was
it.
I hated it, but did it actually accomplish? Is the stock is down, but did the are did is this Machiavellian where the results kind of justify the ends justify the means?
So this week's PGA Tour event, as I said before, is the Travelers Championship. It's the
Yeah.
week after the US Open. It's had this date for a number of years. They've actually really liked that date, as counterintuitive as that would be. The total purse this week, I believe, is $20 million. The winner is going to get 3.6 mil. It's a no. Th this one has a cut. I believe we're going from 72 players to top 60 in ties. So the vast majority of players are going to get to play the weekend, and they're going to earn a big check. There are several other of these signature events throughout the calendar year that all have enormous purses, bigger than anything that would have been thought of 10 years ago. There, if you're at the top level of the PGA Tour, you're a top 20, top 30 player in the world, it's never been a better time financially. Your accountant is really busy because you're making bucket loads of coin. And a lot of that is the result of LIV pulling out players several years ago, upping purses, and the PGA Tour needing to react to retain their stars, to keep, the Rory McIlroys and the Scottie Schefflers and as many players as they possibly could in the fold. And you kept them in the fold and away from the temptation of that LIV money by making more and better events that are going to be easier for the top players to be showcased and for them to make a lot of money. So if what you were sort of saying was like, hey, look, the goal that Mickelson and the folks at LIV were trying to achieve, which was like a greater piece of the pie for the people who were inside the ropes and a bigger pie in general, then yeah, they achieved that. Rory came out actually during his press conference last Tuesday at Shinnecock and was like, it's LIV is probably going away, but at the same time, like the way that the PGA Tour used to be might have been from a competition and fairness and all these different levels of tour, which they're sort of setting up. And we're going to get a big announcement on that tomorrow from Brian Rolapp Tuesday. there were a lot of things that were appealing about that, but as far as like the money and the prestige and the ease, if you're at the really top, they did accomplish that goal for sure.
Yeah. If you were to give me a stock up and a stock down, something golf. I mean, listen, if you want to go with LIV, it's the obvious one. It's the sinking ship. But if there's someone else whose stock is down, or maybe
Well,
it's New York fans, I don't know,
no,
because
I
they were
think that
riding the high from the Knicks and now they kind of embarrassed
the
themselves
stock,
to ship
yeah,
him.
the stock down for me, Maggie, is a pretty obvious one, and it's Bryson DeChambeau personally going 0 for 3 so far in the majors. He's missed the cut now at the Masters, the PGA Championship, and the US Open. This is a guy who seems to be a lot more interested in making YouTube videos and getting out on social than actually playing golf at the highest level. And he can say all these different wonderful things like, I want to revolutionize the game. I want to start up making my own equipment for people. I'm going to do all this different stuff. It's at the bottom line is that the Bryson DeChambeau is in the position where he is because, he won the US Open at Wingfoot in 2020. He won some big PGA Tour events and he was winning golf tournaments. He decided to go to Live, fine. Do what you feel is in your best interest. I get it. But he's playing lousy this year. He's had some success on the Live Tour, but I limited field, shotgun start, playing against a bunch of nobodies. Congratulations. Whatever. He's had, in my mind, the one of the worst, most disappointing years that he could possibly have. He's got one more shot. He's got the British Open, which he'll be playing at Royal Birkdale in July. That will be his hardest. The one that I would think that he would make the cut, no. It's a terrible matchup for the way that he plays. Links golf is a quirky thing. I will be surprised if he makes the cut this year. So I think that Bryson DeChambeau is the easy stock down pick.
Is the easy stock up Wyndham Clark? I mean, I don't know. Can you say his stock is up because he just won his second US Open, which is so incredibly hard, but he obviously did not exit as the fan favorite here.
Yeah, I mean that's sort of the obvious one. The guy who wins is the person who should have stock up. In a weird way, Maggie, I almost want to go with Scottie Scheffler because as frustrating a week as he had, and he was really frustrated, he was right there again. With not making any too many meaningful putts, with having his game be really loose. With so many different things that didn't go his way, Scheffler was still on the first page of the leaderboard. He's had a really strange year. He's had a lot of these events where he's had a loose couple hours, usually early in the week, and he's trying to play catch up. He's never won a major championship from behind. He's always started the last round in the lead. So it's disappointing that he didn't complete the career Grand Slam at Shinnecock. That would have meant, something to him, although he really plays that down quite a bit. But I just look at how talented he is. He's still the world number one player. He's going to be in the field this week. No one, he's won 2 years ago. He won at Travelers. Would anybody be surprised at all if Scottie Scheffler reeled off two or three wins to finish off the season, was in contention again at Royal Birkdale at the next major championship? I just can't tell you how impressive it is to see how much he never stops grinding. Like he can be one of those players who, as talented as he is, and he's as talented as anybody out there, that he puts in and grinds over every single shot. And because of that, it's very Tiger-esque. There's never a letup. Tiger's most, to me, most incredible stat is not the 15 majors. It's the 140 something, I think it's 142 consecutive cuts made. Every week you find a way to make it. Everybody has a bad week. You get a nagging injury, like you're just like, I'm not gonna put it. Every week, Scheffler does the same thing. He's always there, and I can't tell you how impressed I am with that.
Last one for you. Who do we see play and compete in a PGA Tour event next? Tiger Woods or Charlie Woods?
Charlie Woods.
His son.
I would love to see Tiger come out and play. But given the physical injuries, the number of them that the Tiger Woods has had to put himself through for the last decade, the injuries that we know about, because a lot of stuff I'm sure, like, he doesn't come out and say because no one's going to get a chance. The personal challenges that he is now having to face and to deal with, I don't know that Tiger's going to have the opportunity to get out there. It would probably be Tiger, possibly, very possibly, at someplace like the Masters or someplace where it feels something to him. Tiger will be 51 in December. He's not a kid anymore. He's got kids. Charlie is a very good player. He's committed. He's going to be playing at Florida State in a couple of years. Like he's an outstanding junior player. He'll get the opportunity, I'm sure, at some point when he's playing in college, to get a wild card or a sponsor's exemption into a PGA Tour event. So I'm thinking Charlie might, in the next 3 years, 4 years, possibly be getting a sponsor's exemption and would play in some tour event. I don't know that we're going to see Tiger, except for maybe at the Masters. Like, there's so many things that need to be worked out physically, personally, I'm sure to some degree emotionally, for him to get back out there. I don't know at this age, like how long that's going to take. So I'm guessing, 100% guessing. I'm pretty sure Charlie's going to play something in the next 3 or 4 years. I can't say that about Tiger. The Wyndham Clark, angle goes in many ways, Maggie, I feel sorry for the guy just because this is so much of the story. We didn't, and this isn't anything on you, at least that no one's talking birdies and bogeys. No one's talking the fact that like on Sunday, he clearly didn't have it. On a really, really hard golf course, he didn't have it. But when he needed to do it down the stretch, the last 3 or 4 holes, yeah, he made bogey on 17, but like 17 is ridiculously hard. When he makes the long putt on 16 after hitting it, I mean, he hit it like into junk. His caddy's like, how about we hit it 50 yards over there to the side and just like kick it out? And he hits the shot of the tournament over this big heap. If he mishits that ball, Sam Burns, forget playoffs, Sam Burns could be the winner today. Because that ball can go anywhere. But he hit the great shot, laced one up onto the hill, makes another long putt. He made one after the other after the other. That's what it would be great to be talking about. And it's unfortunate that we're not. And I don't know that we ever do get around to like, oh, wow, this guy is actually really good. And he played lights out alongside Scheffler. I thought for sure Scheffler was going to win. I thought going into the yesterday, we have seen big leads. I tweeted out, I don't know. Which is worse, being winning by 6 shots at a major championship going into the last day, or being up going into the third period by 2 goals? Like a 2-0 lead in hockey is like you don't want, that's the worst. You know, as soon as they score one, we get tight, they score another, and now like the flood door. We have seen 6-shot leads just Kaiser Söze, they're gone. And I thought with Scheffler being there, if he could get an early birdie or two. And any little misstep from all of a sudden, like 6 is now 3. We've got 13 holes to play. It's game on. And Scheffler didn't have it. And it was Burns. But damn it, if Wyndham Clark just didn't come up with it when he needed it. And that, it's a shame that we don't talk about that